the Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. You see it, we help you do it. AIB, for the life you're after.
But first, all eyes will be on Twickenham later today as England take on Ireland in the Six Nations. We're joined by a man who is very familiar with what all of the Irish players will be feeling this afternoon. From the time that Rob Kearney first picked up a rugby ball at the age of five, it continued to shape his path until his retirement in 2021. During his 15-year career at Leinster, he represented Ireland 95 times, inspiring fans and teammates with calmness under pressure. After rugby, Rob ventured into the world of business and he joins us to talk about life on and off the pitch. Rob, you're very welcome. We have to start with the match today. You're going over for it. What way do you think it will go?
Do you know what? I'm a little bit uneasy with some of the commentary around the game this weekend. You know, I think everyone seems to think it's a foregone conclusion, which is an unusual place for Irish rugby to be in going away to London. But this team have proved that they can do it against the best teams in the world. And I think in this Six Nations competition, they've showed up until now that they're the best team in it by a considerable distance. They're so driven, you know, to genuinely get better every single week. And the expectation they put on themselves as a group will be to win. So, you know, outside commentary and bookie spreads and all these things don't really come into play a huge amount.
You'll be doing some TV punditry. Do you enjoy doing that, having retired? Is that something you really like?
Yeah, I do enjoy it. I must admit, when I first went into it, I found it a bit difficult. I was still very close with a lot of the guys that just retired. 6 months later, you're in the pundit chair talking about their performances. And I know from a player's perspective, I've been there, that, you know, words can hurt sometimes.
So you would have found yourself holding back against people you'd played with and you knew well.
Yeah, holding back in terms of, you know, I really tried to do one thing, was to be fair and honest.
But rugby punditry is fairly civilised anyway, isn't it, compared to GAA and soccer punditry? That's more of a coliseum. You guys are fairly nice to each other on the TV, I would have thought.
Yeah, but then, listen, the other thing you have to remember is that, you know, this team have won 23 of the last 24 games or something like that. You know, so if a team loses and they play poorly, yeah, you've more of a right to sort of to nitpick and to be a bit more critical and talk about some of the areas that they need to improve on and some bad performances. But this team over the last few years haven't really done that. So, you know, it's hard. Not that you want to go looking for things, but when they're winning every single week, you can't but be complimentary of them.
Do you still have that feeling when you're doing TV punditry or something like that, that you'd like to be out there on the field? I mean, when you initially retire, that feeling must be there. Does it gradually go away?
I don't think so. I don't think so, Richard. And I think it'll always be there. You know, when I'm watching Ireland at, touch wood, 75 years of age, that there'll still be a part of me thinking, geez, those guys are so lucky to be out there. It's a big deal. It's what dreams are made of. And yeah, it's difficult when it ends and you move on with the next chapter of your life. But I do think there'll always be a part of me that'll be envious of the 15 guys who are on the field.
And that difficulty when it ends, Rob, there must be a kind of not an identity crisis, but a mini identity crisis. Because when you stop being a professional rugby player, a professional sports person, there is a moment when you wake up on the Monday morning and you're kind of saying, well, who am I? What do I do now? Did you go through that?
Yeah, I did. And listen, I'm probably in some respects still going through it. The transition takes a long time. You know, they say sports people die twice, the day they retire and then the day they actually kick the bucket. Now, it's a little bit morbid, but there is a sense of realism to that too. You know, my body sort of gave up towards the end. Well, it definitely gave up. And that does make it a little bit easier, knowing that you can't do the things that you used to do.
Was there a particular game or a particular moment where that realisation really kicked in?
Yeah, there was. It was, so when I finished up at Leinster, I went to Australia for a season to the Western Force in Perth. And at the end of that season, we went to New Zealand to play some of their club teams. And it was a dreary Saturday night. heavens had opened up, and it was half time. I think we were getting beaten by 25 points, and I went into the toilet at half time, and I looked out the window and thinking, ah, this is it.
One of the things you've chosen to do, a number of things, and you're involved in different business ventures, and you co-founded a recruitment company, and I want to talk to you a bit about that. But let's just go back to the start. First of all, you grew up on a dairy farm in the Cooley Peninsula. Was it a fairly hard-working, all hands to the pump sort of childhood? A fairly happy, easy-going childhood?
There was a bit of dairy on it, but there was mostly tillage and, you know, an extensive enough farm. Was it all hands on deck? No, it wasn't.
You got off lightly, did you?
Got off very lightly, which was very, very unusual for a farming family that was in its third generation in rural Ireland. You know, I just wanted to play sport all day, every day. And parents would drive me from Gaelic football to soccer to golf to rugby to swimming to anything that I could do.
So you were doing all of those things?
Doing all of them, all day, every day.
And what about school? Did you have a tough time at school?
Yeah, I had a tough enough time at school. So I got quite bullied at primary school, which was tough time. But that's why sport was even more important to me. Because when I was out playing sport, everything else was gone. And I was just in the moment. And one of the lucky things that I was, from a young age, I was better at sport than all of these people bullying me.
So that might be a reason why they'd want to take you down a peg or something?
I don't know. There's never an answer for it or a reason why it might happen, even though it should never happen. It still happens across countless schoolyards across the country.
And it can be completely random. Did you end up in some of those team sports playing with guys who were giving you a hard time in school?
Yeah, I did.
How did you manage that?
I don't know. I just got on with it.
Did you take the legs out from under them, no?
No. Now, if I had my time back, I might have done a little bit differently. But no, listen, I always knew that, you know, it might have been for a period of 2 or 3 years. And I always knew that I was going away to boarding school when I was 13. So that was sort of, that was the light that was keeping me going.
And when you look back on that experience of getting that tough time, do you think it changed or shaped you in any way?
I think it made me a lot more resilient, made me mentally tougher. You don't necessarily want to go through some of those times in order for it to see a positive after it. But this was just sort of a period of time in my life. I still had an unbelievably happy childhood. I don't look back on my childhood thinking it was one that I didn't enjoy or I didn't get the full benefit out of. I absolutely did.
And would you say you're someone who tends to take the positives out of situations, even difficult ones?
I'd like to think so. Yeah, and not always. Not always. And I think that comes with a little bit of experience, a bit of maturity. You know, particularly when in the midst of my rugby career and, you know, you're picking up injuries every few weeks and form selection, media, public pressure. You go through a huge amount of adversity. Everyone does. And I think, you know, when you're in those tough periods, you can't really turn to anyone. Yeah, you've got your close family and your close friends, but, you know, ultimately, at the end of the day, the only person who's going to get you out of a bad spot is yourself.
And the kind of mental strength that you need as a player to deal with that sort of pressure, was that something you think you always had, or did you have to work at it, or were there really bad days with that?
I don't think it's a skill, and like every skill, it's something you have to work on. And the only times you get to work on this skill, ironically, is when things have gone wrong and you have to pull yourself back out of it. But I think every time we as people overcome a setback of some sort, you just add another layer of resilience to your character. And then as time goes on, you look back and you think, geez, I'm actually quite a resilient person. It's because of all those moments along the way that you've managed to come through.
And when you were very young, I think you were only about 2, there was a tragedy in the family. Your older brother, who was only a few years older than you, was killed in a road traffic accident. Was that something that was difficult for the whole family? You probably don't have direct memories of it, but did it shape things in the family a bit?
Yeah, do you know what, again, I don't fully know. I was 3 years of age, Ross was six, and my older brother Richard was nine when the accident happened. As a three-year-old, no, my memory and recollection of it is zilch, non-existent. You know, for such a tragic incident to happen to a family, and for me to genuinely look back now in my childhood and say that I've no idea that something happened. I think.
Did your mum and dad talk about Ross much?
When we were growing up, they did. We'd always reference him. We still do. But I think the biggest testament to them is that they still managed to keep the ship on track. And listen, it was probably the most difficult for Richard, who's the eldest in the family, who was there with Ross at that moment in time. The fact that I was only three and don't remember it, you know, I was quite lucky.
So when you look back on not just Leinster, but your Ireland career as well, what's the most special memory you have?
Two Grand Slams right up at the top of the list, beating New Zealand in Chicago and Dublin right at top of the list. And then on the downsides, you look back and, you know, three quarterfinal exits. That hurts. When I look selfishly at my own career, 95 caps, that hurts me too. I was always so driven to try and get 100. And, you know, I think I missed close to 30 games with Ireland because of injury.
Would it have mattered, the 100, that much?
Listen, when I retired, I told myself it was just a number. And it is just a number, but there's something about playing 100 times for your country
and being
in that Centurion club. You know, it was a driver for me. And to come up short is something that'll always great.
When you look at when things were going, you know, and the Irish rugby team going really, really well, you're playing for them, you're playing for Leinster. You've had some extraordinary experiences along the way outside of playing rugby. You're a distant relative of Joe Biden, and you ended up getting a tour of the White House from Joe Biden. Tell me about that.
It was in 2016. Joe Biden was vice president of America, and he did a tour back to Ireland as VP. And somewhere along the way, they went through his family tree and routed it the whole way back to Finnegan's on the Cooley Peninsula. I think it would say that we are fifth cousins once removed. I remember my dad getting a phone call from the White House back then saying Joe Biden was going to be in Louth and would he like to come along and meet him. I think he hung up. I thought, geez, someone's taking the mickey out of me. But met him and Arison Uachtaráin in 2016 and chatting to his brother, and he was like, we've had the best time over here. The Irish are the most amazing people. You've been so welcoming. It's great to see our Irish family. We want you to come back to America, come to the White House and stay with us in Washington. So myself and Dave thought, Jesus, yeah. We booked a flight out for a couple of months later. And the connection has been built quite strong since then.
Your brother Dave, you both ended up playing together many, many times. What was it like playing with your brother?
It was amazing. The true highlight of my career is been arm in arm with Dave in the Aviva singing Aaron Levine, looking up at mum and dad in their seats, because you know where they'd always sit. A little bit tougher been the older brother, because when we were on the field together, maybe 90% of my whole attention was on myself, but there was this little bit in my brain that was having to look out for him too.
And I hope it goes well for him.
Yeah, and making sure that, because we were both in the back three together, so you can cover each other an awful lot.
Don't drop the ball, Dave. Were there a few little conversations like that?
No, because you're always sort of, you always want your younger brother to do well. Now, I don't know if he had the same thought process for me. But winning some of those games, and, you know, they were special days.
And for both of you, it was particularly sweet.
Yeah, it was.
When you first retired, What goes through your head about the team? And is there a sort of an element of when you're first not participating, you kind of don't want them to do too well because you want to be missed?
1,000,000%, yeah.
And that happens.
Oh yeah, and you feel I feel bad saying it, and I definitely felt it at the time. But you do, and I don't know if that's still that competitive drive within you. You want to be wanted, you know. And I still had ambitions to play for Ireland after the 2019 World Cup. And Andy Farrell called me up on Christmas and said, "Listen, you're not in this next camp." And I was still playing for Leinster at the time, which made it hard because I'd never not made a team since I started out. And now all of a sudden, you have a coach telling you he doesn't want you. So then the next fullback comes in and you're watching that game and you don't want him to go well.
Well, you don't want it to go disastrously, do you?
No, not disastrously, but enough for people to, at the time, have said, "Oh, maybe we should look at bringing Rob back in." But then, listen, every single player goes through that, and if they say they're not, they're telling you lies.
You're clearly a very competitive person, and you can hear that even still, as you talk about things, being competitive still matters to you. How important is that, do you think, even outside of rugby, just in life, in a person's career?
I think it's the driving force behind people who want to go where they're going. And listen, not everyone has that deep-rooted purpose. And again, I consider myself unbelievably fortunate. From a young age, there was only one thing that I wanted to do. And I was solely driven and committed to making that happen. And every single day I got out of bed, I wanted to be a better rugby player. And I think if you have that drive and you have that purpose, well, then the competitiveness is just a byproduct of that. As you're going somewhere and nothing's going to stop you.
So when you finished, you've done a number of things and are still doing several things at the same time, Rob. You're involved with Elkstone Investment Company. You co-founded a recruitment company, Mason Alexander. Who was your co-founder with that?
So the co-founder is a good pal of mine, Andrew Lynch. We went to Clongowes together and we were quite close in college, and he was working for another recruitment company. I remember we were out for dinner one night and he was smashing work. He was doing really well and he was bringing all this money in for his company. So we started having a chat about the startup costs of a new recruitment company and would he go out on his own, and I backed him at the time. You know, it wasn't a massive amount of money to back him, but it was enough to give him the push to go out on his own and get started, and he's 10 years now building, you know, a thriving recruitment company in Dublin.
And then you have investments in bars with other former rugby players. Jamie Heaslip is in there. Sean O'Brien is in there.
Sean O'Brien, my younger brother Dave. And then,
so how do you all get on at board meetings there, discussing what you're going to do with the pubs?
Yeah, we were great at the start. And there's been a couple of hiccups along the way. But as a whole, board level, we're all still getting on very well.
All that professional teamwork and training doesn't fall apart.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. And listen, we all still have a hunger and a desire to keep building up our portfolio.
And what would you like to do, either with those businesses or would you like to do something else? Because, you know, we can talk about your rugby career in the past. You're still a very young man. You know, 5-10 years from now, what would you like to do? What would you like to be doing?
It's a difficult question. And it's one that, you know, you're never truly sure. You know, you mentioned Elkstone. I'm in there, you know, 3-4 days a week. So that's very much the day-to-day at the moment. Enjoying it, learning lots, working closely with the CEO, Alan Merriman, in there. And getting real exposure to how to build a company. When I retired, I took a year out. And in that year, you know, it allowed me to decompress from rugby and sort of take stock and where am I going. But I met so many business people.
Do you need to decompress, Rob? What's that like? I mean, is it a sort of a... We look at it from the outside and say, you know, you're playing rugby and it's going fantastically well and you're playing in the Aviva and you're doing all these things, isn't that a wonderful life? And it is a wonderful life in many ways, but it must be a very stressful situation to put yourself into every week.
Oh, it's brutal. It really is. Again, it's great. You love it. You always want to do it. Wouldn't have changed it for the world. But the highs are very, very high. Euphoric, you know, winning trophies for your country, Grand Slams, amazing. The lows are rock bottom lows. And you go through so many different periods within your career that sometimes the lows are hard to get out of, be it with form, be it with injury, selection, public pressure, contract negotiations, losing for your country. So it's not for everyone, and not everyone would be able to manage the stresses of it.
So it's a bit of a pressure keg, and then afterwards you felt you needed time to come out of that and to kind of unwind mentally.
Yeah, to unwind, to, you know, doing things that you're enjoying, doing things that you're learning. Okay, I played rugby for so long. You work on a skill set your whole life to be an expert in that field, and then you wake up one day and said, okay, that's gone, you can never do that anymore, you have to go and try and learn another craft, another skill, and get good at something else.
Well, you have a whole other new skill. You're married to your wife Jess and you became a dad, so you have to navigate that whole skill set. What's that been like so far?
That's been amazing. It really has. And listen, I always knew that parenthood would be amazing, but I've been blown away how brilliant it is.
You have a son, Bobby.
Yeah, son, Bobby, yeah. 6 months of age.
Six months.
I've also been blown away how relentlessly tough it is in terms of the time and energy and effort they need. But, you know, it's funny, just this little human comes in and you want to do everything for them. But no, it's awesome.
Well, I'm sure you sound like you're enjoying it and enjoying the new challenges of it. Rob Kearney, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for joining us on the program.
Thanks for having me on the show.